Our last speaker is Jeff Price. We're going to move along so that then we can have a good panel discussion at the end talking about philosophical issues. And Jeff is going to be showing how one can use iPS cells to then figure out the flip side of drug discovery, which is how to rule out those cells that have toxicity, particularly in the cardiac lineage.
This will be a little bit of a switch in gears, covering kinetic image cytometry of calcium transients in human stem cell-derived cardiomyocytes. This is motivated in part by the late-stage drug failures that have occurred due to cardiotoxicity and arrhythmias. In about 2001, there was a report released that over the previous decade, there had been 8 drug failures due to arrhythmias, such as Torsade, which is a deadly sudden death kind of arrhythmia, and costing probably about $12 billion just in drug development, not including the billions of dollars, for example, with FinFin that resulted from the litigation that occurred afterwards. And then in 2008, another report says that in the decade preceding, there were 17 drug failures at a cost of about $25 billion in drug development. So it doesn't appear that this problem is getting better. It appears that as the FDA becomes more stringent about the kinds of failures it allows, that even just one or two deaths for a drug that's not going to cure cancer or something is going to cause that drug to be pulled from the market. So we were interested in developing a technology in collaboration with stem cell scientists at Sanford Burnham that would allow us to look at the contracting cardiomyocytes derived from human stem cells in order to produce a human model in a dish that would enable us to look more closely directly at the arrhythmias that might occur due to these drugs at early phase. So once you are finished with primary screening, you've done a million compound screen, you could put it in a more high throughput fashion into a dish and determine whether or not these might produce arrhythmias. So part of the problem is displayed here in this movie. You'll see the first contraction in this paste set of neonatal ventricular cardiomyocytes. Looks like it's synchronous, but after that, the cells are beating asynchronously. So if we use a traditional plate reader or the other instrumentation that's currently available to us, we get an average of all of those things happening at the same time, but we're unable to see the individual cell dynamics. So we designed this instrument to measure those individual cell dynamics. To further bring home this point, you can see some of the cells in the previous movie that I showed you, and the superimposition of the calcium waves, which are indicative of the contraction, you see that these contraction waves are more or less completely unrelated to each other after the first contraction, which means it makes it very difficult to figure out what the dynamics, what the kinetics, how fast those things are occurring are in those cells unless you measure them individually. So our instrument is designed to do that. And this is a schematic of the instrument. A 96-well plate is loaded by a robot onto the microscope. Electrodes are lowered robotically into the well. The cells are paced, and a video is recorded. And that video is then processed automatically by the computer to find the cardiomyocytes, measure their contraction waves, the surrogate of their contraction waves through a calcium indicator, and then automatically make these measurements of the rise time, the full width half maxima, and two of the decay times that are indicative of things like prolonged QT syndrome, shortening of the contraction, or lengthening of the contraction that could be a sign that there might be arrhythmias produced by that compound. As a test, the first compound that was used was thyroid hormone, and you can see that with thyroid hormone, the contractions are much faster. These are the traces of 138 cardiomyocytes all aligned automatically and overlaid on top of each other, and these are the average averages of each of those cardiomyocytes, and you can see that the contractions are much quicker. So if we think about what happens when we put thyroid hormone in a dish, we might also think what happens when you don't put thyroid in a human. And there are profound cardiac effects. If you're hypothyroid, you have enlarged, the heart becomes enlarged, the contraction slows dramatically, and person becomes very listless, right? So when we think about emulating a human in a dish, we probably ought to think about adding things like thyroid hormone to our experiments. Otherwise, the cardiomyocytes aren't going to act normally. So this just kind of gives you an idea of how well the instrument works in terms of statistics, you can see that the differences in thyroid hormone for these measurements, full width, half maxima, have very good p-values indicating excellent statistical significance. And this is because we're able to look at the individual measurements of the cells and compile that composite together into a single set of measurements per well very rapidly. So we get, you know, 100 or so, 100 to 200 cells per field of view, per image, per experiment, essentially, and that improves the statistics dramatically. In addition, we can pace the cells and look at how the contractions occur in a paced set of cardiomyocytes. These cardiomyocytes are essentially electrically intact. They'll stimulate each other. So if you stimulate one, you can see the contraction waves spread across the dish. So they have some of the characteristics of in vivo cardiomyocytes. And you can see that without thyroid hormone, it's very difficult to pace them. And with thyroid hormone again, you know, the contractions become much more normal. So in a validation, we looked at a few of the drugs, and we've been looking at more and more of these. In this center row here is sisapride, or Prepulsid, which was basically a heartburn drug that was pulled from the market because of a few cases of sudden death from torsade. And these data basically show that we get statistically significant increases in the duration of the contraction with about 0.5 micromolar and 1 micromolar concentrations of sisapride, whereas a sister drug, mosapride, that was not pulled from the market, we don't see those kinds of increases in the contraction duration. When we pace the cells, however, it looks like it may be even more sensitive. The changes may be even more sensitive to the drug concentrations, because at a lower dose, 0.1 micromolar, we start to see abnormalities in the follow-on contraction waves. So this is a classic HERG2 blocker, and it wasn't understood that it was going to be arrhythmogenic until it reached the market. In addition, the instrument allows us to go back, so we can stain the cardiomyocytes for different expression markers, look, for example, to see if they're ventricular cells versus atrial cells, and then correlate those measurements to the contractions themselves and look at the characteristics of different kinds of cells in the same population. The rest of this data here shows that we can measure the delays between contraction. If there's a conduction wave occurring across the image, then we can see those conduction waves, and that there can be differences even between the nucleus and the cytoplasm in the same cell in the kinetics of the contraction. This final example is siRNA against CIRCA2, which prevents calcium reuptake and slows contraction. And you can see that we get the expected result with the presence of this siRNA, that there's an increase in the contraction wave. And then there's some other drugs that are more interesting. Diltiazem is an example of a use-dependent or frequency-dependent drug. And as we increase the rate of stimulation, we see at 2 hertz, there's an incomplete block. It eventually stops the heart conduction. And there are differences between the edge of the cell, the ER mask, and the nucleus. That's interesting. Did that work? Oh, there we go. So how does this correspond to disease in the dish? Just as a wrap-up, I talked about the potential for uses in arrhythmias. And we have used both iPS-derived cardiomyocytes, human ES-derived cardiomyocytes. And the potential exists also to look at congenital cardiomyopathies. So you've seen examples from the previous speakers of taking genetic diseases, deriving iPS cells from them. Once those iPS lines are derived, then we can analyze the cardiomyocytes derived from those diseases directly in this model. And I think there's a huge potential for that. And also, just looking at the maturation of stem cell-derived cardiomyocytes, if you're going to use them therapeutically, It would be a good idea to know whether they look more like early embryonic cells after you've got them contracting, or whether they're ventricular or atrial or pacemaker cells, et cetera. So acknowledgments, this has been an excellent collaboration with the stem cell scientists, primarily Mercola Lab at Sanford Burnham Institute, Vallis Sciences, and my lab at the Sanford Burnham Institute. And the funding for this has been largely STTR or SBR type funding from NIH. We had a fast track proposal in 2006 and are currently under a SBR contract to look specifically at using the instrument to find arrhythmogenic drugs. Thank you for your attention.